As a teenager in Oklahoma, Jimmy Webb first heard Glen Campbell on the radio. Just a few years later, the country music star was listening to the radio when he heard Johnny Rivers singing "By the Time I Get to Phoenix." Campbell thought it sounded like it could be a hit and recorded his own version. He had good judgment. The track, written by Jimmy Webb, went on to win 2 Grammy Awards. In 1967, Jimmy Webb was one of the hottest songwriters in music, thanks to that Glen Campbell hit and for writing another song you may have heard of, Up, Up and Away by the Fifth Dimension. But even though he had a hit with Glen Campbell, the two had not yet met in person until a couple of years later at a recording studio in Hollywood.
And I walked in with Jesus-length hair and a beard and my flowered shirt on and my old jeans and put out my hand and said, "Mr. Campbell, I'm..." And he looked up from tending his guitar, and he sort of cut me with those bright blue eyes, and he said, "When you gonna get a haircut?" He was definitely right of center on political issues and not in favor of hippie types, generally speaking. He had recorded a song called Universal Soldier and had a hit with it, which is clearly an anti-war statement. And on the one hand, he was certain that he wasn't in favor of war, but on the other hand, he was certain that this new wave of permissiveness and drugs and the long hair and the crazy clothes and everything, he was sure that was un-American.
The hippie and the son of an Arkansas sharecropper seemed like an unlikely pair, but Jimmy Webb and Glen Campbell became good friends and went on to have many more hits, including Wichita Lineman, the first gold record of Campbell's career. The singer enlisted Webb to write it. Since By the Time I Get to Phoenix was so well-received, Campbell told Webb they should try to do another song with a town in its title.
The conversation started with that. He said, "Jimmy, can you write me a song about a town?" I said, "Well, Glenn, I'm trying to move on from the town phase of my career. You know, I'd been stuck there. And I used to get like a little warm spot on the back of my neck when I stayed in the same place too long and really wanted to move on. I said, Glenn, I honestly don't think I have another town song in me." And then he said, "Well, could you make it geographical?" And they were in the studio, very insistently sort of waiting for me to produce a song, you know, like it's like watching a hen and waiting for her to lay an egg, you know. And I started working on a song based on the panhandle country of western Oklahoma, which is a very, very flat, almost featureless landscape, except for these telephone wires that come up and these men who would park their trucks and climb up on top of these poles, and I'd see them talking on these little phones. And I was thinking, they have phones up there? Who are they talking to? So that was the image that started floating through my mind, was this kind of mysterious figure of the lineman and the quick photo, if you will, the kind of selfie, that quick snapshot that we took as we went by and we saw his pickup, we saw him, we saw him just for a second, and then we forgot him. He disappeared on the horizon of time, as it were. And I started being curious about him and what would be going on inside his head, and I decided that he was in love. From that moment on, the song really began to write itself. And it really wasn't finished when I sent it over to them, but they recorded it as it was. And I don't know how many records it sold, but I think he got a Grammy for Best Album for it.
And more than that, Wichita Lineman has become one of the music world's most enduring songs. It appears on several greatest songs of all time lists and has been recorded by everyone from Johnny Cash to R.E.M.
It's certainly nothing that I ever expected out of my career. I was just a kid, really. I was probably about 19 or 20 years old when I wrote that. I certainly was not Richard Nixon. I didn't have one eye on history. I was just trying to make a living in this industry. Obviously, as I get older, let me put it this way, as we all get older, we begin to question our place on the map of life and wonder whether our life had any significance. and what we, in real terms, we may or may not have accomplished. And to run across something like Wichita Lineman, which is still popular with youth culture and covered several times by very young bands, and still has respect out there and street cred, I mean, to me, that's kind of like the icing on the cake, you know? It's like, oh, you mean, and I get this too? Yeah, I get respect? You know, I wasn't thinking of myself as Irving Berlin. I was thinking of myself as making a living.
And Jimmy Webb has done just that. The list of songs he wrote and the roster of artists who recorded them is a veritable who's who in music in the past 50 years. But it's his work with Glen Campbell that is closest to his heart because of their friendship.
Let me just throw a couple of statistics at you. Glen recorded 120 versions of Jimmy Webb songs. Probably between 80 and 90 of those were original, first-time, one-off cuts. Some of them may have been covers, but the discography is huge. 120 records is huge for one writer. He recorded almost everything that I wrote. That's what it boils down to.
And while Glen Campbell admired Jimmy Webb, the feeling was mutual. Webb even remembers the first song he heard by Glen Campbell.
The first one had a tremendous influence on me. It was called Turn Around, Look at Me. There were 10 years between us. He was 24 when he put out that record, so that meant I was 14. And I remember swearing on a stack of Bibles and praying until the knees were worn out of my jeans, praying and saying, "Dear God, please let me write a song half as good as Turn Around, Look at Me, and please let me meet Glen Campbell." That was a childhood prayer. But meanwhile, he's busily sowing, you know, like dropping his DNA all over the music business in all these different camps. I don't think it's ever been made clear just how influential a figure Glen Campbell was. Very, very seminal, important in the music business. And sometimes you're like hard-pressed to find someone that he hasn't influenced. There's a list of records that he played on, whether it's Jan and Dean's Surf City or whether it's Strangers in the Night by Mr. Sinatra. And he was everywhere. He was in everybody's pie. He was playing and singing with the Beach Boys. He's working with the Mamas and Papas. So to me, it's kind of a one-of-a-kind story. There was nobody who had that kind of reach. He helped Elvis a lot. One night I spent with Elvis. I spent hours with Elvis at the International Hotel. He played Glen Campbell's copy of Wichita Lineman over and over. He'd play the A side, flip it over to the B side, flip it back to the A side, back to the B side, over and over and over and over, both sides. So it was a Glen Campbell evening.
How those iconic songs came to be will be revealed and celebrated Friday, June 5th, when Jimmy Webb, the Glen Campbell years, plays the Schwartz Center in Dover.
Now for something completely different they used to say on Monty Python. It's completely different for me. I work alone, and so to lock myself into a soundtrack, more or less, is a little bit bothersome. But it was for this cause, which I think is all important, and that is to get away a little bit from the sensationalism of Glen's disease, and kind of, in hindsight, and with a certain sobriety, observe and evaluate who he really was on the musical scene of America, and how many fibers, how many colors in the quilt were Glen Campbell colors, and how did those happen to be there? So I've generally given you the philosophy of the show and the fact that we have a lot of material that just hasn't ever been seen that's somewhat significant in widening our view of who Glen was and what he did. And so I try to shed some light on that. pictures and video that have never been seen before. They're personal things, things that I've saved, of Glenn and I performing together. In fact, we duet on stage. Obviously, he's not really there, but his likeness is there, his voice is there, and we perform together. We do that two or three times during the show, which is uncanny in a way. And it's all this up-to-date, top-notch technology that absolutely leaves me in a complete befuddled state. I just have to kind of hold on to the horse and hope I don't fall off. But it's done in a very dignified and, I think, respectful way. Because I love Glenn. I have no axe to grind. You know, there have been different things written in the press and written online about, you know, whether he should be at home or whether he should be receiving this kind of luxury care that he receives, which is almost like being in a hotel. But he's now living in an assisted living facility. He doesn't remember me. He doesn't remember any of the songs I wrote for him. He doesn't remember how to play the guitar. So because I loved him so much and because the relationship lasted for so long, I'm trying to rest one last portrait of Glenn while he's still alive, a portrait of who he was and how important he really became.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the whine, and the Wichita lineman is still on the line. I know I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.